Welcome to the third preseason Your Super Coach Coach podcast. This week it's just Mark and I.
G'day everyone.
We will be going through the first round in the last 2 weeks of the NAB Cup games. We go all the way back to last Friday night, Richmond, Hawthorn, North Melbourne. To be honest, I enjoyed this one the most, probably because we got the football back for the first time, but the tempo did feel a lot faster. Should we start off with the guy who's been rubbed out for three games, but luckily can serve it in the NAB Cup, and that's Rhys Conker. Were you even considering him, Mark?
He wasn't really on my list for Supercoach. I think he probably more of a dream team prospect, even though he's probably a little bit underpriced. Just that second year player, the fact that he's probably not going to become a full premium, had me not really looking at him too closely. What about you?
The same. I know around Twitter and Facebook he's been talked up a bit, but yeah, I'm not really looking at Conker either, although he did look pretty good in the midfield, and I guess he'll spend more time there this year, which is why Absolutely. A lot of people are looking at him.
And last year he spent a fair bit of time down back, so he's getting a role change as well. So he should definitely score okay, but whether he gets above sort of an 85 average would be fairly doubtful.
Now, we're going to look at Brandon Ellis and Stephen Morris, which are the two Richmond defenders. How did you like their games, Mark? Which one do you reckon is more likely to be a fantasy score? Because I think all of us reckon Brandon Ellis probably has the better job security as their first round draft pick from last year.
Yeah, sure. It's interesting because they might actually be competing for the same spot in the team. One thing that came across was that neither of them are probably going to score all that well in our teams this year. So whether that's going to be good enough for the last defensive position or not, it's going to be one we're going to have to judge. And maybe I know some coaches around are putting sort of more midfield rookies in now because of the low scoring back rookies. I saw today that Brandon Ellis is going to be taking the kick-ins, or at least he has been given license to do so if he's sort of closest to the ball, which I think is a good sign, and it shows that they have confidence in his disposal and kicking out of the back line. But it's tough with these young players playing a fairly defensive role. It's going to be tough for him to score overly well, but Ellis out of the two for me.
I'd probably have Morris ahead. I thought he got his hands on the pill a bit more. At least he looked a more attacking player than Ellis, who seemed a bit more defensive in my mind. But Stephen Morris, I wasn't too impressed with his kicking. So
I think I'd give the 18-year-old a bit more freedom than the 23-year-old to have suffer from nerves and the spotlight a little bit. So I think in that sense, I gave Ellis a little bit more freedom.
Either way, I was a bit more hopeful that they'd produce something a bit better during the first round, but it is the first round of the NAB Cup, so we'll continue to look out for them.
The other Richmond rookie that stood out for me was Webley. I think he had about 9 touches in the second game. I've had him in my Supercoach team a couple of years ago. It's his third season, probably not going to be a superstar, but has been training with the midfield group and one to look out for over the next few weeks as well.
I guess the last Richmond player we should touch on is Dustin Martin. He had 11 disposals and a goal against the Kangaroos and played only that one game and predominantly in the midfield. Did nothing to dampen the Supercoach hype on him still on my team. Mark, how'd you like his game?
There's been so much hype over him over summer, and then in the first 3 minutes, I think he had about 4 possessions and a goal. He just like made a huge impact from the start of the game. Definitely didn't do anything to make people take him out of their sides. There's still a whole lot of debate about whether he's the right pick or not, but we'll probably come to that in a later show, but definitely looked her up.
North Melbourne, I guess the one that we all liked was Sam Gibson's game. Of course, we know he's the mature age recruit from having previously been listed at Hawthorn. So he's at that basement 94.7k price, and I think they just put somebody on the long-term injury list. Is that right, Mark? So there's a spot for Gibson to be elevated, which I guess most fantasy coaches are seeing as likely, but I guess it's more hopeful at this stage than anything. He had 9 disposals for 29 DT points against the Hawks. Showed some pretty strong decision-making skills, which I guess is to be expected considering he's 25 years old. He's quite composed in the contest.
You would think that he'd slip into the North Melbourne midfield. It's, again, just someone to watch over the next few weeks, but I think he'd be in most people's teams at the moment.
Now, the one dynamic that maybe we should talk about is Goldstein McIntosh. How did you see that playing out?
Probably largely as expected, that McIntosh is going to make it so that Goldstein is probably not going to be able to score quite as freely and as well as he did last year. Petrie was like the second ruck last year, which just meant Goldstein spent so much time on the ball and he was really improving and was given so much freedom. But yeah, that sort of just made both of their scores just that little bit lower. I think if I was going to pick one of them, I'd be picking McIntosh because he could score close to what Goldstein will score and is like 300,000 cheaper.
I think Goldstein only got 18 DT in that one game he did play, and McIntosh Tosh did get more of the ball, and both he got 24 DT in each game. So it does seem like it's going that way. Personally, I have him crossed out just because you get worried about that extra pinch hitting ruck taking points away. I remember McAvoy only averaged about 89 Supercoach points when Cozzy was in the side, and he averaged, 112 when Cozzy wasn't.
So. And there's plenty of examples over Supercoach history where when you've just been the sole ruckman that you just get a huge advantage with scoring, which is, I guess, why players like Mumford and maybe Jacobs are standing out to a lot of coaches out there.
Now on to Hawthorn. Birchall v. Suckling. We've been doing that for a long time now. Mark, do you have a definitive answer for us at this stage? Or
I think that Birchall is probably a bit of a better player than Suckling. Suckling's got a great kick on him, but Birchall's still really improving. I personally would be taking Birchall out of the two. I think he's probably more reliable. What about yourself?
I'd go the same way with Birchall, I think. But that's more, I think he's a safer pick. But with Suckling's awesome foot skills, I do think he has a slightly higher ceiling.
What did you think of Buddy's move to the midfield? Does that make him more enticing or less enticing?
It's funny watching him go into the midfield and realizing that no matter what part of the ground Lance Franklin's playing at, he's going to rack up the free kicks against. He was very overambitious. Got caught holding the ball a few times. But yeah, I did like it. He did get his hands on the pill quite a lot. I think Champion Data did their Supercoach points or whatever. It's a sort of an extrapolation on the two shorter games, and they spat out 167. So he had to have had a pretty good game. But I think Clarko said after the game that, he's going to spend most of his time in the forward line and only releasing him, when he's struggling to get into the game, or maybe they need to change up the opposition lineup.
Which is what I loved about Hawthorn and Buddy last year, was that he didn't have as many low scores as he'd had in the past. Sometimes in the past, he might get a 20 here and there, and that would really affect his price and bring it right down. But last year, if he was struggling, they'd get him up the ground. He'd get a few extra touches, and it meant that even those low scores were moving up to 70s and 80s. So if you're expecting Buddy to be a lot cheaper later in the season, it's probably not going to happen as much as it would have a couple of years ago, which is why I'm a bit more inclined to pick him in my starting team.
Okay, is there any other players that you want to talk from those three games, Mark, or shall we move on?
Cyril Rioli looked pretty magic again. Obviously, it'd be tough to pick him given his injury history. It was interesting to see Jordan Lewis play a bit more time in the midfield. I'd like to see how that works out over the next couple of weeks as well.
Now to GWS, Collingwood and the Western Bulldogs games. We'll start with their high-profile midfield draft selection, Stephen Coniglio. How did you find his game, Mark? Because I was personally a bit disappointed. I guess it is their first run out, and you don't want to judge too much on the NAB Cup games and whatever. But I remember seeing Swallow last year and being impressed straight away and not having quite the same air of impressiveness with Coniglio.
Sure. I think Swallow was probably that little bit higher rated, and also Swallow, didn't he have the extra year where he played for Gold Coast in the VFL or the reserves? So he's probably a little bit more ready for the jump up as well. So he's not really on my radar just because he's so expensive. Out of the more expensive picks, probably Wingard that we'll come to later stands out a little bit, but just too expensive for my mind. I'm probably not going to average 80 plus this year.
How about Thomas Bugg, who was listed in Sheedy's likely round one team that he did a couple of weeks back now? He had 10 disposals for 30 DT, and he is a mature age player. How did you like his game?
He was probably the one from the Greater Western Sydney that stood out more than the others to me and jumped straight in my team. He seems to have really good disposal.
Yeah, I remember Gold Coast, and having a lot of Gold Coast players last year and being quite disappointed with their scoring just because they lost by such significant margins that the players just never really got enough hands on the ball to be decent rookies for us. Now, going into 2012, I'm quite mindful of that and trying to stay clear of most GWS rookies, except if they press their cases exceptionally well, and I think Bug was one of those, and like you, he's in my team at the moment. So,
sure. Could you pick two Greater Western Sydney defensive rookies, do you think? Or would you pick two on any individual line?
Do you mean in terms of when we hit the bye, or?
No, just so from the start, would you start a Bug and a Daly or Tomlinson up back, having two from the same side, given the fact that they're probably going to struggle to get a lot of points?
The issue isn't, necessarily having two in the same line as much as I don't think there are two in any one line that I'd want to pick up, just because I'm being extra selective with these GWS rookies. Now, I guess I might as well reveal who the actual three GWS rookies I have in my team at the moment. I have Bug, for reasons stated before. I have McDonald because he had a good game on the weekend and he's rookie price. I think his last, didn't he average 100 in his last season before being forced
to retire? Sounds about right. He's a tackle machine, should get plenty of possessions. The only concern would be that he won't play every week.
And Giles would be the other one that everybody else has. But that's how selective I'm being. I don't think I have any other GWS players, and I don't think it's hard to find others that are tempting. But for every tempting GWS player I found, I've tried to find even more tempting mature age player.
Sure.
So
I think that most coaches' teams out there will probably have 5+ GWS rookies in them. So
I think you need your rookies to be even more spot on this year than you do last year. Last year we had 3 bench players on each line, and I do remember we didn't have to use all our rookies up.
Impromptu had Hunt on the bench.
Yeah, and we didn't need all of them to make the money because we already had enough players to get us to that full premium side. But this year with 3 less rookies to make money out of, we don't really have a chance to just be carrying dead weight in our side anymore. So low scoring rookies is definitely something to avoid. If you're reckoning 5 GWS rookies, Mark, and you think about that as a proportion of your whole team, that's a lot to be gambling on rookies that may potentially only get you to that, you know, 250 to 300 mark, which in the past hasn't been enough to be worth cashing in, to be worth that one trade.
I think you're probably right, and I think in my own side, I'm probably leaning towards more like 4. But you bring up some really good points, Marcus.
For example, one player that we're going to be looking at a bit later is Simon Hogan. Now, he's priced a lot higher, but personally, I have him in my team at the moment just because I like the rookie depth in the midfield. I like the rookie scoring potential in the midfield, but I don't necessarily feel comfortable with playing that many rookies off such a short bench. So introducing a player like Hogan, even though I am, you know, sacrificing 60K, I feel a lot more secure having a rookie that I'm quite sure will play all the games if he stays fit, which I can't say with confidence with a lot of the other rookies, even the ones that are looking good. We know McDonald's going to get his rest. Gibson still needs to be elevated to get in. Neil from Fremantle looks good, but you can't be certain of his game time now. A lot of people are looking to stretch the amount of rookies they have in their midfield. And do you really want to be playing 4 rookie midfield this year with only a 2 rookie bench, considering we have buys to contend with this year and we have more resting than there's ever been in the AFL? I guess having said all that, we're not going to spend too much time looking at all the GWS rookies. We'll talk about Giles now. I did just touch on him, but we should talk a bit more in depth because I think a lot of people are considering him maybe even as a ruck too. So he had 6 disposals, 7 hitouts, 3 tackles and a goal for 45 DT points against the Dogs, and 8 disposals, 8 hitouts and a goal for 44 DT against the Pies. Now, those are really impressive numbers, and I was personally very surprised at how good he was around the ground. He presented for marks, disposed of the ball well. It didn't really look like a ruckman in my eyes, and I guess maybe I'm too used to having Mark Blake run out for us for 99 games. Huh. But
definitely a big lump of a lad, though. Like, he's a big guy, but he did move pretty well, and he was good sort of below his knees. And I was quite impressed by Giles. Obviously, that's exactly what you want from a rookie, to come out and just completely smash it and get heaps of hitouts and heaps of possessions and goals. And the interesting test will come when we see Brogan and Giles play in the same game and we work out how that balance is exactly going to work. Obviously, Giles is pretty much going to be in 100% of serious coaches' teams now that we've seen based on this evidence, because he will get a lot of game time and he will score at least okay. The decision, I guess, is just going to come down to whether you start him on the ground or start him on the bench. And I think if you expect him to score more than most of the other rookies in your team, then it's going to be very hard to leave him on the bench.
Having said that, like, you want that type of scoring on the ground, but how strong does your 3rd and 4th ruck have to be to give you that confidence to do that?
You would want some cover there, but it's not necessarily different to any other season. I know in the past we've sort of gone in with reasonably weak benches, and you're hoping that your premiums and that Giles are going to play every week, so you're hoping that it's not going to come into play. And I guess you could take the risk that you deal with it later, or that one of your 2 bench players are playing. And we have, I know we'll talk about Stevenson later, but we've got Redden, Derek X, and a few others that might get some game times that could sit at R4 as well. So I think if I see that Giles is going to score 80+ on week in, week out, then I'm pretty much almost certainly going to put him onto the ground.
I think I'm probably a bit more gun shy because Stephenson's game on the weekend, and I guess we'll talk about that in a bit. So just before we leave GWS, I guess we'll mention a few players that did pretty well and maybe to keep your eye on. Kirtley Hampton, we've been talking about fantasy circles for a while now. He wasn't too skilled in his disposing of the football, but he did look decent enough to keep your eye out on. Rhys Kuiu, who was a relative unknown, at least in my eyes, impressed. He had 8 disposals, 1 goal, 1 for 35 DT, and he was quite lively. He was always in the contest, so he looked really really good. Dylan Shield, we just want to mention, he's been talked up for a bit, but it was weird that he was wearing a moon boot at Blacktown, so that's just something to keep an eye out for, even though he was supposedly getting his appendix out, so that was weird.
Don't know why you need a moon boot for an appendix, mate.
Yeah, it was weird, so keep your ears to the ground on that one. And Dom Tyson, who is the other highly rated midfielder, 186,000. He had 9 disposals, kicked a goal, and very, very classy player.
Probably more impressive than Coniglio.
Yeah, definitely so.
On the night, anyway.
Tempted enough to keep my eye out on him, despite his high price tag, so that's good news. Now, to the Bulldogs, Matthew Boyd was thoroughly impressive. 37 disposals across the 2 games for 145 DT points. Now, Mark, is he an option this year? Can he stack up against the other elite players, considering, you know, he did have a very good start to last year, but he did taper off a bit towards the middle and end of the season? Probably not quite the scoring you want.
He ended up with 115 Supercoach average, which is very... I think Judd had about that. So
I think it was like 120 at the start, or 125 even at the start, and it tapered off quite significantly.
Sure, it did. Considering the fact that he'd had 106 average before that, 104 the year before, he does seem to be upward trending still. Seems to have still plenty of upside, was capable of a few 160s last year. I think you should probably be taking him into consideration. I think there's so many great midfield options this year that he probably doesn't enter a lot of people's discussions, because there's just so many great choices, and you've only got so many spots to put in, and he doesn't play for one of the top teams or one of the teams that you expect to be in the top 4, so he probably does get missed a lot. I doubt he's going to be a really poor pick though, and he could easily average 115 to 120 this year.
Now, Ryan Hargrave was a premium about 2 years ago, averaged 97 Supercoach in 2009, but the last 2 years he's been hampered by injury, so he's dropped down a lot in price. Only 280,000 for a former premium who had a very, very good first outing. 11 disposals, 5 marks, 47 DT against GWS. 8 disposals, 5 marks, 47 DT against Collingwood. Now, what do you reckon about Hargrave, especially in the position of the ground where arguably we have the weakest premium?
Sure. Has averaged 96 in the past, which you'd be very happy if you could get a player in for 280,000 to do that. I think if it was 220,000, that he'd be in a lot more teams, because there would be a lot more less risks associated with him. But at 280, like, he's just in that really awkward price bracket. I know that the Bulldogs had a much higher kick to handball ratio than any other team in round one of the NAB. Be interesting to see if they keep that up. If they do, you'd think that Hargrave would be a fairly decent selection. Bulldogs have a history of high scoring halfback flankers. Gilby's probably not going to play so much back there, so I think that he'd be a pretty decent pick, but he's not in my team at the moment. I personally probably like Lake a little bit better at this stage.
Now, on to Collingwood, and we've got Heath Shaw. He had 47 and 43 DT. I don't think we need to discuss him, but one player that probably needs a bit more discussion is Steele Sidebottom, who's a breakout contender.
Steele.
Yes, he had 10 disposals for 44 DT against the Dogs, and 10 disposals for 38 DT against the Giants. And I know he's very popular in fantasy circles at the moment. I know he was penned into my team for a while now, and I'm sort of just on and off him throughout the preseason. Not quite sure if I can commit to him breaking out or not, but plays for a likely top 2 finisher. I think he was drafted lower than his worth. I remember he kicked a huge bag of goals in the junior grand final. He's a very classy player. We saw what he did in the grand final with a ridiculously good effort. I thought it probably the highlight of the game when he produced a goal out of, I think, 3 separate efforts. Clearly has scope to improve just well it happened this year.
Yeah, the Bombers were very keen on him in that draft when we took Hurley. Obviously we had to take Hurley instead. I'm a huge fan of Sidebottom. He's had great durability, averaged 85 the last 2 years, pretty much playing in the half forward line. I think that he has huge upside. I don't expect him to dominate games like he did in round one of the NAB on and on and on, because they didn't have the Pendlebury in there and they didn't quite have their elite midfield, but I do expect him to be given a lot more midfield time. I like him a lot better than Beams as a pick, and he's $100,000 cheaper. Averaging 85 already with a move to the midfield, you'd think he'd get at least an extra 5 points, and if he averages 90 at his price, it's not a complete fail of a pick at all. So if he can then boost his average to the 95-100, which is well within his capability, then you've got a really good pick on your hands.
So am I getting that you're saying he's a no-fail pick? At nobody's the very worst, five.
Nobody's a no-fail pick because they could just get injured 5 minutes into the game, but he is very much on my favourites list, put it that way.
Dane Swan, don't take note of his games because I don't think he cared too much. He thought the Pies had lost in game three in the post-match interview. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't take that too seriously. Yeah. We'll get to that at some stage later where we talk about Swan versus Pendles and who we should pick when we look at midfielders later on in the preseason. But one person I did want to mention was Dale Thomas. He was outstanding in those two games. He just seemed to get heaps of the ball, looked a class above around the packs and in tight. And I was very impressed by what Dale Thomas was able to produce in those games.
He had 26 disposals in total for 113 DT across those two games. And I remember talking to you, Mark, at the football on Friday night, and I compared Dale Thomas's game to Gary Ablett's. I do think they play a similar style. Obviously, Ablett has gotten a lot better since the days where he used to play into a small forward and slowly breaking into the midfield. But they're very good mark for their height. They're very evasive. They have good foot skills. They cover a fair amount of the ground. I do think they have a pretty similar style, and I could see Thomas improving his average to the likes of Pendlebury and Swan. He's even going to be a unique selection considering that he shares a team with Pendlebury and Swan.
He finished with 109 for the year, which is pretty strong. I think it was about a 20-point jump on the year before. So he'd still need to make another 10-15 point jump, which is huge to be really competing with Pendlebury and Swan, and I think that's why he'll probably be squeezed out of most teams. But at this stage, with a Pendlebury less midfielder on the weekend, he was extremely impressive and looks a lot of value at 590,000.
Now on to West Coast v Essendon v Fremantle.
Boo. Can Shannon, we not talk about these games?
Shannon Hearn, Mark, to tell us about your Shannon Hearn. And he snuck into your team at the moment.
I did say that he has snuck into my team, but I haven't seen anyone else with him in their teams really over the preseason. 440,000, has a really good scoring history, averaged 93 a couple of years ago, but then only in the 80s the last 2 years. Largely that was because he was tagged out of a lot of games last year. And obviously that's not going to happen in the NAB, and that's why he picked up so many kicks in the first game. Definitely on my watch list, and I think someone that should benefit from the modern day playing style in his seventh season. I don't know whether he'll stay in my side, but he's someone in there at the moment that I think has a 20-point upside possibility.
With Lacroix going down, there was a bit of a tussle for his best slot in the Eagles' best 21. Now, Hams, Hill and Whedon seem to be all fighting it out for that spot. They all had pretty good games. Hams had 42 and 34 DT. Hill had 31 and 26 DT. And Whedon had 55 and 27 DT. Now, Hill, I think we picked him as a rookie a few years ago for the Dogs. If you guys can still remember him from back then. Obviously traded to Eagles during last year's trading period and should fill a pretty similar role playing on the wing and in the forward line. But I guess the most fantasy relevant of the three is probably Whedon, because the other two are mid-price picks, whereas Whedon is a 113K rookie. And he did have a very impressive game where he had 6 disposals, 4 tackles, and 2 goals. That's that 55 DT game against the Bombers, although the Bombers admittedly weren't playing very good football with a very inexperienced team. Nonetheless, he's a good chance for breaking into the Eagles side, wouldn't you say, Mark?
Definitely on my watch list. I think that I've got a few forward rookies ahead of him at the moment, and these forward rookies can be so inconsistent as well, so especially the small forwards, it can be quite difficult for them to score well on a regular basis. Yeah, I mean, obviously you should definitely keep an eye on him. I thought out of the three, Hams was the most impressive, and apparently he's Wasfold's pet, so he should get plenty of game time this year, but like you said, he's awkwardly priced. Yeah, one to keep an eye on, but he's not in my team at the moment. One player from the last game that I was also impressed with in a similar role was Zephaniah Skinner. I have him ahead of Whedon at the moment, but I could be out of whack there.
Another forward rookie, you'd know better than I would, Essendon's Delolio.
Yeah, and huge raps. And I was watching, I think it might have been 360 last night on Foxtel, where they had Bomber Thompson on, and he was the one from the rookie draft last year that Bomber really singled out as the player most likely to get a lot of games this year. And he was really impressive. He's such a sneaky, cheeky little player that doesn't play conventional football, and he'll look for different ways to get an advantage over his opponents. And it looked like there was plenty of opportunities for him to sneak behind the press and kick a couple of goals. So he's not going to get a lot of possessions, but he should kick a few goals this year, and I think he'll actually get pretty regular game time at the Bombers.
Jake Melksham's a player that I want to talk about. I
love Jakey.
Yeah, when he was first drafted, I thought maybe not such a good pick around pick 17 or something. But changed my mind a bit. He's certainly bulked up this year. Again, he is a mid-price risk. Improvement is pretty much definitely going to come in 2012 from Melksham. It's just whether it will be enough to be worthwhile selecting him. He had 10 disposals, 4 marks, 4 tackles, and a goal for 55 DT against the Eagles and acquired a
but then went missing a bit in the second game. Yeah. The word out of Essendon is Essendon's been very quiet over the preseason about how much information they've been releasing, but they've recruited the weapon from Geelong, the new fitness trainer, and he has bulked up a few players with Collier and Melksham probably standing out and Benny Howlett standing out as a three that been a lot of talk about. Melksham should be able to hold his head over the ball a bit better as a result. I think he'll play a much more significant role in the Essendon midfield this year. I think it's really likely that he will average 85 to 90 in 2012. I think that he should easily be able to do that in the Essendon midfield. He'll get plenty of opportunities to do so. The problem is his price and the fact that he's in the midfield. I think he's about 330,000, and it's really difficult to pick a midfielder like that when there's so good rookie alternatives or premium alternatives, and ultimately you're probably better off picking one of them, because even if he averages 90 in the midfield, even if he has a great season and gets up to 100, he's still not up to premium status. So unlikely to pick him personally just because of that sort of strategy effect. But I think that Jake is in for a big increase this season.
On to Fremantle, and there are actually quite a lot of players to talk about. Paul Duffield is one that I want to mention. He was premium-ish in the back line a few years ago. I think he managed 95 sort of average. He's only priced at 410,000 now. He had quite a poor season last year. Only managed 12 DT against the Bombers, but had a much better 9 disposal, 39 DT game against the Eagles. How do you feel about Duffield playing under Ross Lyon? We know he likes rebounding with those highly skilled players, and I think Duffield, from training reports at least, has been playing that rebounding role. Bodes well for his fantasy prospects in the home and away season.
Sure, and he probably is a bit underpriced. My concern with the Freo defenders like Duffield, Broughton, Soob, and that sort of player is that at least one of them is going to get picked up every week, and Duffield might get on a hot run where he scores quite well, but after that he's going to get shut down and that might release one of the others. So that concerns me a little bit, that he might struggle to keep up really good scoring all year, and because if he does, he might get shut down at some stage.
One of the big takeaways from that Sunday night was Nathan Fyfe. We know he's had a limited preseason, but to be honest, he showed no signs of it during the games. He had 10 disposals against the Bombers, all of which contested for 34 DT points, and has snuck into my team after that performance, because that was the only reason he hadn't made it into my side. There's no reason he can't keep improving, and you know, we saw what he managed last year with a dodgy shoulder, so very excited for Fyfe.
My concerns there would be, or the alternative to what you're saying, is that it's only a 40-minute game. He hasn't had a preseason. He still might be able to do the intense running, but might not have the fitness to go through a full AFL game once it starts in round one. So that would be the concern, would be still fitness over Fyfe.
Rookies to look out for. Lachie Neal, 106,000. Really got fantasy coaches talking after his performances. It's 6 disposals for 2 goals for 37 DT against the Bombers, and 3 disposals, 3 tackles for 21 DT against the Eagles. Spur was the rookie on our lips up till the intra-club match, where apparently Neal had quite a strong showing, and he's continued that into the first game of the NAB Cup. Lyon has already been pretty quick to praise the lad, already talked him up straight after the game.
I saw him before the game as well say that you should be looking out for Lachie Neal. So very impressive start from Lachie Neal. I think some of us, when we look at Fremantle rookies now, we sort of think, is this Nathan Fyfe number 2? He should take a midfield spot in a lot of teams this season, I think.
The other two players to talk about, Pavlich and Sandilands. We'll start off with Sandilands. I thought he was pretty disappointing. He had 28 hit out. He only managed 6 disposals in total, and he was completely dominated by Cox in game 3 when Cox had that 62 DT game. He had the 2 goals to go with that as well. What do you reckon of Sandilands then? I think we did mention him previously and talking about turf toe maybe holding him back.
I'm probably not totally against Sandilands as much as you are. I think 28 hitouts is just a ridiculous amount, and there are a lot of points for hitouts to advantage. Maybe they were just easing him in, like other midfielders, like Swanee. We sort of don't take too much out of what he's done in the preseason. Maybe he wasn't, they were told for him not to run quite as hard as he normally would. I think there was some evidence that he's not being used on the kickouts as much or around the ground, so we'll look out for that over the next couple of weeks. But I think there's still a very, very good chance that Sandilands will average 120-plus this year.
Now, Matthew Pavlich, 9 disposals, 3 marks, 3 tackles, and a goal for 52 DT against the Bombers. And Lyon explained that Pavlich will predominantly be playing forward in 2012, and he'll only be moving into the midfield when he's sort of struggling to get into the game. So similar to Franklin, which we discussed previously. So I know I've been a bit dismissive of Pavlich so far this preseason, but there are a lot of people who are excited with Pavlich because we do know that he was a very good Supercoach scorer when he was playing in the forward line. I'm just still a bit worried about the modern game maybe stifling his ability to score playing in the forward line, and that maybe he'll drop off because he did have a very, very good season last year.
Sure, probably more consistent last year than he was in previous seasons because he did have that move to the midfield. And a lot of coaches do seem to be going off the key position forwards this year. I'm probably a little bit more bullish about Pavlich. I think that he should benefit greatly from moving into the forward line, and that Fremantle moving up the ladder this year could quite see him have a really, really big year with 70 odd plus goals. That could return him easily to the 110, 115 average that we saw from him when he was last playing as a key forward in the 2007, 2008 sort of seasons. His durability does seem to have dropped off in the last few years, where he has missed 2, 3, 4 games and even played through sections of the season injured. So something to be wary of. But personally, I have him just ahead of Fife at the moment, but there's still some debate to happen over that.
On to this week's game, Sydney, Geelong, St Kilda. We'll start off with whole footy world just loves the guy. I've never seen active players tweet about other active players returning from injury and showing such support as the AFL fraternity did for Lenny Hayes. He only had the 5 disposals for 24 DT. Personally, I don't see him as a viable option at all. In 2011, 13 midfielders averaged more than 110, and the 6th highest averaging midfielder averaged 116. So, you know, if you assuming the optimal midfield, your M6 average is 116. Now, if you go to get Lenny Hayes, who's a 30-year-old returning from a torn ACL, even if you assume he returns to 100 points per game, you're losing out on 16 off the most optimal every single week. Now, is a maybe 15 points increase in price worth losing 15 points off your max scorer every single week? I'm not quite sure I'd be going for such a pick.
Personally, I really haven't considered him this preseason, mainly because I probably don't have as big a reps on St Kilda. I see them dropping off a little bit. So he's dropped off a little bit because he's older. There's got to be some injury concerns as a result of coming back from his knee. Plus he's a mid-pricer, essentially, or not a fully fledged premium. So I'm with you, Marcus. I think that it is too much of a risk, and you are copying too much pain by not having the absolute, or pretty close to the absolute best in the midfield.